And once again, I'm Johnny, she's Denise, and this is Recovery Radio on KRFP in beautiful Moscow, Idaho. And we're here in the studio with Tom. Tom's a returning guest. Tom is an interesting fellow who I met in my swim trunks. It's a long story. We won't go into it right now.
And I was not there.
And Denise was not there. Promise you that.
I was going to say that we were going to sit here in our underwear and our bathing suits again. That didn't work out last time either. So no, we're not.
Not well. Tom has been in recovery from drugs and alcohol since 1988. So that makes 30 years this year. Congratulations.
Excellent. Yes, definitely. Congratulations.
And Tom also has the unique insight of not having sight. He lost his sight 5 years ago due to a medical condition. And that's not even the part we're going to talk about today. So I'll start out by saying good morning or good afternoon, Tom. How are you?
Good.
All right.
And it's, yeah, I'm doing very well.
All right. And what we're going to talk about with Tom today, we talked about it, touched on a little bit in our last session with him. He had a son who committed suicide about 4 years ago. And this was only a year after Tom lost his sight. And so we know it's been 4 years ago, Tom. Tell us a little bit about the events of that day without, you know, any need to be too graphic or too specific.
Well, there was, we really had, it was a big surprise to all of us. We had no idea what was, you know, coming up. We knew that. Wasn't long before that, when I first had lost my vision, I started picking up on my other senses, and I noticed that Jake would be talking to himself and occasionally, and I could hear him sitting by the wall talking to himself, and so we kind of thought there was something going on. So he was actually committed in a facility for 20, whatever that amount of days are, 24 days or
right,
22 okay. days.
So in a psychiatric
yes,
facility?
Yes, a psychiatric okay. facility in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And after that time, they were releasing him back to us. And they said, her exact words were, well, he'll either be back or he won't. I'm kind of...
It's just a little vague sort of thing.
Yes.
Was he diagnosed with any sort of disorder at that time?
At that point, they didn't want to say anything that he might have had some schizophrenia going on, but they didn't put a label on it yet. They did give him some medication. Prozac, I think, is the
mood,
chemical.
Mood stabilizer.
Yeah. And, you know, right on the label, it says, do not give to teens. You know, it can cause harm.
How old was Jake at that time?
Jacob was 17.
17, okay.
Yeah. He was 17, going to be 18 in just a couple months, and just wasn't even done being cooked yet, you know, wasn't done growing up. But for all of us, you know, it's a real-life situation, clearly, with him, with what's going on. You know, it was kind of a normal day. We were making, believe it or not, we were making burritos, and he said he was going to go take a shower, and I went in there, and obviously he was, can I say it? How I found him?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, he was hanging from the shower curtain rod, and that's the kind of, man, it's kind of pain you wake up with every day. So we did CPR on him. My daughter and I did for some time. And then at that point, you know, obviously we had paramedics were coming in. We got back what we thought was a heartbeat. And we did. So they did. We took him down to the hospital. We were in the hospital for 3 days. 3 days. 3 days. And on that fourth day, on Valentine's Day of all days, they did a test. And it was... You know, he was brain dead. Mm-hmm. So we decided to donate his organs. And so there's a lot of very lucky people in Oklahoma
Definitely.
There that got his olive. And it is, that is a remarkable thing now from, you know, yesteryear to when we lost Jake, is they literally can use every part of a human from, you know, from all major
organs
to skin, veins, coronas, and arteries.
Yeah.
Yeah, the corneas. And I kind of found that kind of interesting, considering I'd gone blind, that he's going to actually be able to give somebody else sight. So that's cool, you know, yeah, as far as that goes. And as far as a terrible, terrible situation, you know, something positive did come out of that. You know, he did get to bless quite a few people with a beautiful heart. And so that's a... That's one positive thing that did come out of this.
Right, right.
So
since that time, Tom, have you sought out or gotten any professional counseling yourself? Your daughter, obviously, who was there, your wife, I'm sure she was around too. Did you go out and try and seek some help at that time?
Well, see, I thought for me, I mean, I thought I was handling this well. I mean, I had no idea that I was as angry as I am. You know, I'm pretty easygoing, get along with everybody. But at that point, I didn't think that I needed to see anybody. So, and it's been, like I said, 4 years now. And my wife and daughters have come to me and said, I need some counseling, because it's not, you know, talking to a stranger about it is not like actively trying to seek help and recovery from losing somebody. And so I do know quite a few people that have lost loved ones to this disease, or whatever you want to call it, you know, suicide. And so they all suggest the same thing. You need to talk to somebody. And so I am now, I think next week will be my first actual appointment with a psychiatrist.
And it sounds as though you're looking forward to that.
Oh, definitely. I think I'm at a point where I feel, I don't want people mad at me. I'm a pretty easygoing guy. I mean, I like to hang out with people. I don't want them to, like, throw cans of corn at me after I'm done talking to them. So, so I do try to maintain, you know, who I am, considering I've kind of lost myself with my vision and my livelihood. You know, a life had literally on that day turned upside down, and then losing my child a year and a couple months later was the, you know, the icing on the cake. And so I am actively seeking help. I wanted to get some marriage counseling, because our marriage after 26 years is, that really puts a thing, you know,
a huge strain.
A lot.
And so, and it's my wife, it feels that for us to get marriage counseling, I need to see somebody as well before we start working on our stuff. And our stuff is minute. I just want to go back to where it was before I lost my vision, you know, and that's not going to happen. So losing a child and then all of that. So we are dealing with a lot. But we just keep on fighting the good fight.
Sure.
There you go.
So.
And there's just, I feel like there's definitely nothing wrong with seeking the guidance of some different people to help with some things that aren't really clear. I mean, sounds like over the last, you know, 5 years, there's been a lot of change in your family and in your home. I mean, I can only imagine. I mean, can you give some examples of some of the things that happened just even from when you lost your vision?
Well, you know, even from, you know, honey, we need a six pack of Pepsi for tacos, and it's no longer, hey, I'll go get the soda. Right. You know, it's everything kind of fell on my wife and my daughter, who just, you know, was not even a driver yet. You know, and for her, our youngest was still at home. And when I did lose my vision, I had a stroke to boot, and there's a lot of stuff that went on that I didn't even know that I had a daughter that was, you know, 13 or whatever it was at that time, that I didn't know that she was even born. And so there were some issues that she had to kind of work through too. Now, they're very supportive, you know, of me, and they do help with a lot of stuff, you know. I mean, as far as...
Well, yeah.
you know, I mean, everything from getting dressed to trying to learn how to do everything over again and doing it as a blind guy. You know, you don't just get up and walk across the room anymore because sometimes there's a table there. And that always kind of helps. I guess that kind of brings the light side of this blind stuff as far as when the blind guy walks into the table and then that kind of leaves a bruise and stuff. And that kind of makes it where people can laugh. It kind of breaks the ice, so to speak.
Is it true, Tom, that when your wife's angry with you, she rearranges the furniture in your house?
Absolutely. But she's very supportive, you know. She will move the coffee table, and when you smack your shin into it, it's one of those like, hey, did I move that and forget to tell you? So, she's very supportive of me, and she helps with literally from everything. You know, now I am able to do laundry, and I can fold clothes, and yes, my underwear are turned inside out a lot, so she does help with that kind of stuff. I don't know why I keep going to underwear whenever I'm in this little room.
It's
here.
It's totally okay.
It's okay.
You guys met in your swimsuit swimming, so.
I guess that's
and then the comedy that happened, you know, out of that conversation last time was pretty good. Yeah. So,
well, I'm sorry. I'll get off the underwear.
It's totally okay.
No, keep the underwear on. Don't take off the underwear, please.
All right.
So, Tom, I was thinking, not necessarily to point out you specifically, but to help maybe enlighten other people and to help make us all kind of aware of something. I'm going to ask you this question. So what maybe did your family or friends notice that made you think, maybe I could be angry or maybe I should go talk to somebody? Like, what does that look like, you know, for you?
Well, you know, and it is... Because you don't see it. I mean, I didn't see it. I still don't see it. And it is a thing where somebody, a loved one or somebody that's close to you that can say, hey, they can see a trigger there. And so it is a case of that when they saw that, they finally, I think it was my oldest daughter that she came to visit and she was angry with me. And we're like tight, my oldest daughter and I. And she's the one that was like, Dad, you know, there's something really up, and so you need to talk to somebody. And that was kind of, for me, she really pointed it out to me.
Yeah, I just think that it is. It's our close, our family, our friends that might start noticing the difference sometimes maybe before we do.
Yeah, right.
Which is helpful.
And change, for good and bad, in my experience, it takes time. Mm-hmm. You know, a person can be, you know, extremely angry about something and then, you know, deal with that instant anger. But the resentment, you know, hangs around.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm sure, I don't want to speak for you, Tom, but in my experience, when I have a resentment and I don't deal with it, it has a way of sneaking up on you later on and infiltrating. It might not even be a reaction to a straightforward stimulus. Like, for instance, if I ask you about your son's suicide, you're fairly open and you talk about it. But if I were to talk about going fishing with a friend, that might poke something in your brain that reminds you of, you know, I used to go fishing with my son.
And like you said, it is absolutely true, you said. Totally. You know, where there are, fishing is one of those things that he and I used to do all of the time. I'd come home from work and he'd be waiting out in the front yard with, you know, a glass of tea and a shotgun. And no, we weren't fishing with a shotgun, but that was one of those things. If he was in that mindset of that's what, you know, hey, Dad, you know, I need to get out of here and let's go. So we'd go out and, you know, shoot, you know, clay pigeons and we'd go fishing and he would kind of do that kind of stuff with me. So I knew, and that was kind of, I think, his release, because we didn't know that there was problems going on and we wouldn't have known because I was there for him as far as that goes. If he needed to just get out of, you know, we lived out in the country anyways, but if he needed just to get away, I was always there for him. So when I went blind, he kind of lost himself in that aspect, that he didn't have that escape for himself.
So his ability to deal with you're losing your sight was problematic for him as it was for you. I mean, yes. Earlier you were talking about, you know, your wife and your daughter, and I'm sure your son too had to start picking up some of the load,
right,
that you used to bear, that you used to carry for the family.
Yeah.
So you noticed things accelerating with him.
Oh, quick.
As things went by there, while you're still trying to deal with the fact that I can't be a plumber anymore, at least not like I used to. I can't jump in my car and go for a drive like I used to. Yeah. So the loss of your sight, obviously, I mean, it affected everyone around you.
Oh, and it was very real. I mean, it was very, quick as far as, because I didn't realize just how much of the matriarch of the entire clan I was.
Well, matriarch is the maternal figure.
Well,
and
what's the man?
What's the man version of the matriarch?
The patriarch.
Oh, the patriarch.
I don't mean to be picky here, but I don't want people to think there's more going on here than meets the eye.
Very good. Okay, I was the patriarch of the family. Well, that's very cool. I learned something today too.
And I apologize.
So, but I was very much the patriarch of the family, and was with the entire family, you know, my cousins, the whole lot of us, you know, and my wife is kind of like, as far as that goes, has had to kind of like step up and, you know, get a job, and had to really kind of fill in for us, you know. And it is, you don't realize how much of a role a father, a husband plays in the dynamic of a family until you remove it suddenly. Absolutely. And when that's gone, you know, your spouse, somebody has to pick up that slack. And so she did, and she worked, my son worked, and they were trying to fill that void, which is not sleeping under a bridge, you know, is
right.
You know,
right. Trying to avoid those things.
Exactly.
I mean, it's not as though you died, but
right.
But your family dynamic changed.
Oh, man.
Drastically and suddenly.
Well, it's terrible when you got people that are actually telling my wife that, oh, well, he's alive. Well, it would have been better if he had passed away. Oh, we could give you much more help. And so that's kind of like, well, there's a, you know, that's a shot in the arm for, you know, for that. What do you do with that? You know, they can't give you assistance because
I feel like it shouldn't have been said like that, but I guess.
Well, no,
I wasn't there. I'll be quiet. Right.
No. That's, I mean, my head, my eyeballs start spinning in my head as well when Tom said that.
Yeah.
You know, and although we're talking about your son's suicide, not yours.
Right. No.
I think
the background's important.
I think that's significant because, I have known people who have committed suicide who have had to deal with less than what you had.
Yeah.
How are your feelings about that? Did you ever go to that place in your head?
I have been in pretty dark places, you know, and something always happens to where, you know, I don't know if it's, I can't really put my finger on just one thing, you know. I mean, I do have a relationship with Jesus Christ, and I don't know if that kind of is always in my mind, you know, that, you know, and I am in prayer, and so I do, maybe that is kind of something that I do hold on to, as far as for me, that kind of helps me, you know, stay grounded. And so, and that is very important.
And those, it helps pull you out of those dark places.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and I do things, you know, that try to, I don't like being alone. Being alone for too much time is a bad deal. You know, you spend too much time by yourself, you get inside your head, and you start spinning. And
There's a guy that lives in my head that's trying to kill me.
Yeah, that's right.
He's the one who says, "Hey, let's go get a 12-pack, right. Jump in the car, and go on a road trip."
Wouldn't you just love for him to reside somewhere else?
Yeah.
Like, it's time for you to move. You just want to put like a for sale sign on his lot.
Yeah. Well, I've done that, and the fellow who took over the property and has that guy locked in a cage. I like to refer to as a god of my non-understanding.
Yeah,
but he's doing a hell of a job, and I'm really happy with it at this point.
Good.
So I absolutely understand. You know, your faith in Christ is something that can pull you back from those dark places.
Yes. And for me, it is God, Jesus, or whatever you want to call him. And I know for some people, it may be a doorknob, but you got to have something, you know, that you grasp onto and not that can of beer, because that's not going to get it done. Or, the crack pipe, whatever the boggle is, you know, that's not where you lean.
Definitely not. That changes your,
oh man,
your brain literally. In so many different ways, chemically and physically, into a whole different direction don't even understand until, yeah.
Exactly.
Then maybe never.
Yeah. And then if you want to talk about voices then.
Right? Oh, my goodness.
So that's a whole nother subject.
Yeah. That's a whole nother one. I think I have some opinions on that one, too. Yeah. So that'll be for a different time. But wow. Yeah.
Well, tell you
private
what,
conversation.
Tell you what, kids. I think this is a good time to take a little musical interlude. So we'll do that. And we'll come back and we'll talk a little more with Tom about, where he wants to go going forward.
Yes. Oh, and make sure you grab a pen and piece of paper, because I will be giving out some phone numbers in this next half hour or so.
That's right. And we'll talk a little bit about our guests that are coming next week that are also going to tie into this topic pretty well. So here we go. Little bit of The Police, King of Pain. And you're listening to KRFP in Moscow, Idaho.
today. It's the same old thing as yesterday.
And we are back live on KRFP in Moscow, and you're listening to Radio Recovery. I'm Johnny. She's Denise.
Hello, everyone.
And we have Tom on the other side of the desk today, and we're talking to Tom about the loss of his son to suicide. We've gotten a little history on what some of the effects it's had on Tom and his life and his family, and I'd like to ask you, Tom, a little bit about, you know, going forward, because, I mean, we all hope to go forward and make things better or at least different. So why don't you share with us what you would like to experience going forward?
You know, I mean, for me going forward, there are things I would like to enjoy once again, as far as, I want to go fishing again. I used to like fishing and enjoy fishing. And so there's obviously other issues at hand with the blindness. I can't get in my truck anymore and just drive down and go fishing. At least anybody on the road would prefer that. That's a
thank you very much.
On behalf of this, I don't think you'd get very far.
On behalf of the general public, let me say thank you
and your own well-being.
Yes. So, there are things that I would like to do. I used to load bullets, and I'm still trying to find a way to be able to do that. You know, whether it's having, you know, adaptive equipment so I can load bullets again, because I used to make a superior bullet as far as shooting goes, and killing clay pigeons or paper, it didn't matter, because I did like to shoot. And so I would like to get back out into the woods, and I have last Christmas got a crossbow, so I can shoot crossbows. Matter of fact, John helped me with that.
we killed his shed and the ladder.
I think I heard about this,
That's right.
That was,
we did kill the shed and the ladder, but it was all right, man. We got it sighted in. Yeah, it was good. And so that is something I am looking forward to. There are things that I could do as far as, like, camera systems on whatever I'm hunting with. So that is something I look forward to doing in the future. Matter of fact, John and I are talking about, I do have a 2-seater bike that my wife bought for me, well, that we bought.
Tell us about your experience on the tandem bicycle with your previous drivers.
Well, on a 2-seater bike, there's a back end to a bike. And so I have had...
Which sticks out farther than a normal bicycle.
Exactly. And so I've had my hands ran into poles and my feet run into curbs. And it just is a...
Just because the driver forgot to add that extra feet of bicycle on there.
Yes. And being blind, there is a lot of entertainment value, you know, I mean, from the and you have to look at it in a positive way, because the other side of the coin blows. So you laugh about stuff, you know, when, you know, if you're making tea and instead of putting ice chips in your tea, you put, you know, frozen corn. I mean, that's one of those things you have to laugh about. You know, I mean, there was a time I put some cheese on a hamburger patty that I'd cooked, and I ate it with A1 sauce and some seasoned salt. And when I got through eating the burger and I couldn't cut through the last piece of the burger, it was the Ziploc bag that I had just eaten because I didn't realize that it was still in the bag after I put it in the microwave.
Sure. Oops.
So, and it's.
But this too shall pass.
This too shall
pass.
Gosh,
I can see myself being so guilty of doing the same thing. Oh, goodness.
So, and there is a lot of, you just have to laugh about that kind of stuff. So.
Right, right. No, I understand that. And, you know, going forward, you know, you're looking forward to getting your counseling to help wrap your head around or gain some understanding, at least, of how you're dealing with your son's passing,
yeah.
In a deeper sense. You know, I love, I mean, counselors, psychiatrists, you know, sociologists. Those people do such wonderful work in helping a person dig down in to, you know, and finding out where it is, where that hole is in your soul that that's yeah. trying to kill you, that's trying to hurt you.
Yes.
You know, where that pain exists. And, you know, I think it's great that you're pursuing that. And I guess a question I have for you is, what does hope look like for you? What do you want to see coming out the other side of that, as far as, you know, being able to understand yourself better? Because obviously, you know, you may never get an answer on why.
Yeah, the why. There's never going to be an answer to the why. And that's the one question that I will always want answered. And anybody in my family and anybody that's ever been in the situation is the why. And there's no answer. And you'll never get that answer.
No,
so, and it's a case of where you just have to pick up, carry on. And for me, I am trying to do the best I can. And hopefully along the way, help somebody maybe deal with whatever it is their boggle is, you know, whether it's something as terrible as what I've experienced or whatever, you know, I mean, whatever it is. So I do hope to just help people there. And there are short-term goals I have, long-term goals, and I do forget a lot of stuff, but, you know, riding my bike, you know, John and I have plans for taking a ride over to Washington this summer, you know, or spring, whatever it is. And so that's a thing that may not be a big deal for some, well, for most, but it's kind of a big deal for me because I want to do that, you know, and it's just because I want to do that, get outside and experience the outdoors like I used to. And I'm just going to do it differently, you know, ride the bike. And so that's something that I am looking forward to doing. And I do travel and see my grandkids and get up to the UP in Michigan and have gone fishing up there with my cousin. And that's always, you know, rehabilitating for me as far as that goes, because everything we do is outdoors. And it truly is.
And do you feel that's in a sense you're honoring your son's memory by doing those things, by being helpful, by talking to people that are going through tough times? I mean, regardless.
Yes.
It could be tough times in recovery. It could be, you know, I lost my job, and because of that, I lost my house, and, you know, now I'm living on the street.
Yes.
The ability to be relatable in hard times.
And that, like you just said, that is a big deal, is that I can relate with people as far as what they're going through, because I have been there, you know. And it is kind of cool with the blindness thing. There's no judgment on whoever's talking to me about anything, because I don't care what you look like or what you're wearing, you know, because I can't see it to have a judgment.
Why don't you share your story about coming out of the store in Oklahoma?
My daughter and I were coming out of a store in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and we were kind of in a Mexican grocery store. And so we went in, bought the avocados because, well, they have the best avocados, creamy, good. And you guys know what I'm talking about, the good
avocados,
creamy avocados.
Good.
Oh, yum, yeah.
So we're coming out of the store, and I give this little guy a fisherman's handshake that I give little people. And then I start talking to their dads or uncle, whatever they were. Start talking to them for a little bit, and a little bit turns into 5 minutes or longer. And so my daughter finally says, Daddy, we got to go. So we get in the car, and as soon as I close the door, she says, Dad, do you know who those guys are? You can't. I said, no, who are they? And so they're gangbangers. They have tattoos on their eyes and everything. And that's when I think I realized that this blindness thing is kind of a cool thing, as far as, sure, it sucks to be blind, but there's no judgment. Because before, I would have never talked to those guys, because I just wouldn't have. And now I talk to them like they're people, and they were talking to me like I was just people. And that's when I think I realized that it can be cool, because there's not a judgment on what you look like or what you're wearing. And it was just a bunch of guys standing there talking. And it was a cool experience for me. I don't know if they got nearly what I got out of it, you know. And so that's just as far as that goes. There's not that judgment. I do enjoy that I can talk to anybody. You know, I was at home once and got here, knock at the door, and here's this lady there, and she says, Tom, you know, and says, hey, you know, you, how you doing? Because you can't see them to know who I'm talking to. Well, she brought me a Frisbee. And I said, well, thank you very much. And I come inside with this brand new Frisbee. And my wife says, who was that? I said, I have no idea. I was clearly talking to her about playing Frisbee with the dogs. And she had an extra Frisbee, so she brought me a Frisbee. So it is cool that I just am able to talk to anybody. And I guess the other side of that, too, is this is another lady kind of had tattoos literally everywhere. And I didn't care because I can't see her. I just thought it was pretty cool that she brought me this Frisbee.
You see, know, people for who they are.
Exactly. You know,
what they look like.
And people are generally nice. You know, they meant, you know, they don't know what's going on inside. They just are. People are generally kind to, you know, blind or whoever. Mm-hmm. You know, that's your first response to anybody is, hey, can I help you? You know, and that's just kind of the way I've always was and always still am. So it is just kind of unique how people are generally kind as far as that goes.
Well, and kind of contrary to that thought, I believe I referred to you for the first few times we met over at the Wellness Center as Blind Lemon Pledge.
Blind.
But
that's right.
I don't get that one.
It's a reference to a old Cheech and Chong routine, yeah, where
that's right,
they have a blues man who's obviously just stoned out of his mind.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And the character name was Blind Lemon Pledge.
Blind Lemon Pledge. That's right. Yeah. Well, very good. And I know that, you know, John and I hit it off pretty good. And it was kind of unique how it is unique how in this thing we call recovery that we are able to seek each other out and just know and are able to talk without really talking about that. And you eventually it does come out.
Right.
You know,
right.
But it is kind of a unique thing, a gift that we all have that we just know, and then you start talking and you hit it off with most people.
Well, I've found that people I know who have been in recovery for, you know, even just a little bit of time, one of the biggest gifts I've received, and I see it in others as well, is empathy.
Yeah.
Because I never had empathy. I never really cared for it.
Right.
You know, it's like the difference between justice and mercy. I don't want justice. I used to think I wanted justice. I want mercy, because if I get justice, I am. That's it, man. I'm walking the plank on fire. You know,
I think we all are.
And along with that, you know, along with the gift of mercy, I've been given the gift of empathy.
Yeah,
almost to absolutely. A point where when Tom and I talked about, you know, him coming on the show and talking about this very, you know, sensitive subject, after he agreed, I freaked out inside my head. I'm like, holy buckets, John, what do you know about suicide? I mean, I know I've talked to Tom. I know he's been able to, you know, share some of it and some of his feelings on it. Which, you know, I thank you again and again for, because it gives me an insight. But it was my empathy that drove me to write down a few questions. And I spent a lot of time writing down three questions to ask you about.
Yeah.
because, you know, I was terribly, terribly concerned for how this was going to affect you and Denise and our listeners out there.
Absolutely.
Because I'm sure we're touching a raw nerve on more than a few people.
And it is a raw nerve, and it doesn't matter if it happened, you know, last month or 5 years ago. It is raw, and it's one of those nerves that will never be healed. I've talked to people that have lost children, you know, 30 years ago, and for this particular woman, it was as raw now as it was then, and it is a wound that never heals. And the only thing for me that does help is talking about it. And it, and I'm not like everybody, you know, my wife does not like talking about it, you know, and that's, and her, my kids, they're not real bit keen on talking about it. And so for me though, talking about it helps me with him. 'Cause I mean, we really did have a wonderful relationship. Jake and I did. And when I lost my vision, our relationship was, I felt like it was severed then because I wasn't there for him, you know, and so it was kind of, and I feel bad about that, you know, as far as, and I know I cannot take the blame as far as what happened, but I do feel, I always will feel responsible, but it's kind of a difficult.
What I'm hearing is you're angry at yourself.
Oh yeah.
For not being able to.
To be there, to pick him up again.
Yeah,
you know, and always
to help him be better.
Yeah, just to lift him up in that situation, and not knowing, you know, that just not knowing, and what could I have done differently? You know, everything, I would have done everything differently, but not, I don't think anything would have changed. You know, as far as what. Then what? You know,
right, I mean, exactly. Had this not happened when it did.
Exactly.
You know,
could it have been a case of...
Was it something that was going to happen eventually, or was it something that was going to mutate into something
worse,
far scarier?
Oh, yeah, exactly. You know, and you don't know. You hear the things that are going on the news today with some of these people and with guns and what's, you know, schools, and it's... Like, my God, you know, how far could this have gone? You know,
yeah, like, well, Sandy Hook School, that young man was things still happen, and that was, you know, we can't project that onto your son or what would have happened there, but I can understand your guilt.
Oh yeah.
You know, feelings of guilt, you know, misplaced or not. I mean certainly you didn't put yourself in this position intentionally.
No.
We could sit here and do another, you know, 3 hours on why this
happened.
3 days
on responsibility and pointing fingers and the who's and the what's.
Yeah,
and it
exactly.
would still be the same outcome of,
that's right.
You know, I guess the same thing I tell most people is, you know, hug your kids, you know, let them know that you love them. And I know for a fact that even in that last minute, Jake knew that I loved him, you know,
right.
He did. And I never afraid to hug that kid, any of my kids, you know, my daughters, my sons, I didn't mind hugging them in school, and I would kiss them on the cheek and they knew it. And so there's no doubt in my mind that my kids know that I love them. And now my grandkids, they all know that I do love them. And so that is just something that I stress on anybody that's in a situation, just let them know that you love them.
Yeah.
And you know, even if it's not a situation of you're having issues with a child or anything, you know, you let people know before you go to bed, hey, I love you, you know, whatever, with your kids, your nephews, nieces, just make sure that they know that you love them and that they can talk to you about anything. And make sure when I say
anything,
no holds barred, man. Let them, when they start talking, let them go. And just shut up and let them talk.
Absolutely.
Well, Tom, listen, we're going to do a few announcements here, but I want to pre-thank you all. Thank you again,
yes,
I'm sure, before
absolutely.
The end for opening up for us here today about what's going on with you and and the story of your son and how you and your family have been dealing with it or not dealing with it. But it sounds like you have hope for the future, and we're I know Denise and myself and everybody who knows you and loves you and wants you to achieve some of that healing that you deserve.
Absolutely. Well, that's good. Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah.
Denise, it's always a pleasure to talk to you.
It's good
and
to talk
John,
to you.
John, I'll see you at the pool, dude.
Yeah, absolutely.
Pull your pants up.
So I want to let everyone know that our podcast can be found on iTunes. I usually type in Recovery Radio, Laetal Recovery Center. It can also be found on the Laetal Recovery Center webpage, which is laetalrecoverycenter.org. I believe would be the right. Yes, I think so. And then we are an outreach program of the Laetal Recovery Center here in Moscow. And their number is 208-883-1045. We had planned to have Gina from Sequel Alliance Family Services on. She had an emergency with one of her clients. And she will be on our program here, I'm sure, within a few weeks. And we look forward to having her on. Next week, we will be having Sharon Fritz from the University of Idaho. She is a counselor over there. I believe student counselor would be the best way to describe her job. But she's going to be coming on talking about ask, persuade, and refer. And this has to do with talking to someone about suicide. If you if you come across anyone in your day-to-day life or in your family, your friends who could possibly be thinking about that. Apparently, it's very, very important that you go ahead and ask the question. And she is going to, within 45 minutes, really talk to us and help us understand how to comfortably have a conversation. I mean, I listened to her share at the Laetal Recovery Center about a month and a half ago, and I think that the information is definitely understandable and general, and that anyone could benefit from hearing this message. And I think that it would be very helpful. So please tune in next week to listen to her interview.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Good. Let's see.
What else we got?
Let me give out Celebrate Recovery. That's at Real Life. They meet on Fridays. I believe it's around 7, but hey, double check. It's 208-882-2484. Real Life Church is located by Safeway here in Moscow. And they also have a lot of other classes that are restorative kind of classes that can help you get through lots of different kinds of situations. They have Bible studies, but also just all sorts of different things. We had a gal on the other week for Mending the Soul. And also here in town is Weeks in Vitry, and they are an outpatient recovery center. You can be a self-referring patient. Weeks in Vitry is 818 South Washington Street here in Moscow. And their phone number is 208-882-8514. And they help with addiction and alcoholism. Give them a call if you'd like. And Sequel Alliance Family Services, their phone number is 208-882-5960. And I'm going to hand it back over to you, Johnny.
All righty. And we are out of time.
Yes.
So we're going to segue out with some music. And I want to thank you all for listening to Recovery Radio.
Yeah.
We do have the LRC Recovery Radio webpage on Facebook. Stop by there. We'll be posting up future guests. So if you have time to spare and want to hear about some interesting things in recovery, I think we're going to try and get the Crochet Ladies on coming up, and that should be some fun. So KRFP in Moscow, Idaho, and you were listening to Recovery Radio.
Tall and she grew up right with them Indiana boys on an Indiana night. Well, she moved down introduced and we both started grooving. She said, I dig you, baby, but I got to keep moving on. Keep moving on. Last dance with Mary Jane. One more time to kill the pain.